Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, Barton Simmons there, Chip Patterson here. We finally made it home after our time in Fort Lauderdale. And if you have not gone back to look at and listen to, and you can't look at a podcast, but you listen to the Win Totals Locks with Barton Simmons, Tom Fornelli, and myself, then you absolutely should. Barton, I think I said look at because I immediately was transported back to the Thunderdome of the three of us having to put our picks on the table, sitting feet away from each other. It really added to the intensity and intimacy of the conversation.
It was, you know, and there weren't as many disagreements, honestly, as I thought there would be. So in some ways, the Thunderdome disappointed in terms of the conflict that was supposed to arise, but in terms of the better, in terms of the moneymaker, if you listen there was a good bit of consensus. I feel like everyone sort of liked everyone else's picks, so perhaps we found some value there out there in the betting sphere.
Yeah, I think that we had three picks, I think, that received actual locks from either a Barton and Tom, a Tom and Chip, or a Barton and Chip. No lock fights, unfortunately. We had
a couple lock scraps or something, but
yes. But it was a good stuff. It was a good time, but heck of a time to be traveling on the way back, as what started with Breck McMurphy's reporting around Big Ten Media Days regarding Zach Smith. Zach Smith gets dismissed from Ohio State. And then Brett McMurphy continues to report. He Courtney Smith, Zach Smith's ex-wife, speaks in an interview with Stadium. The reporting from McMurphy has included text messages between Courtney Smith and Shelley Meyer, Urban Meyer's wife. They've included photos that had been sent on group chats. And then on Friday, Urban Meyer releases a statement. We get a Zach Smith interview with ESPN on SportsCenter where they are getting their side of the story. I am, in this case, Barton, a little bit thankful as someone who's been put in a position of creating takes and breaking, synthesizing information and trying to make it, packaged in a way that is going to be consumed by the college football fan. I'm glad that we've had a little bit of distance to look at this, because the different twists and turns dating back to Big Ten Media Days, where you were at, all the way to now, I feel like what, you know, we might have gone from, you know, this was Urban Meyer leading a story to make it seem like, you know, this was all something that was put in the past, all the way to now. Like, I feel like we've oscillated on four different lands between what the path is on where this ends up. Like, how have you sort of changed your own mind as the different twists and turns of this story have gone down over the last couple weeks?
Well, when we were coming back from Fort Lauderdale, like you said, all this stuff was dropping literally like while we were on the plane, or while I was on the plane, while I was traveling. And I landed in Nashville and got hit up from CBS. Hey, can you come on do an HQ hit? And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. But like, it was a little bit of a nightmare because I had to sort of try to digest this and spit out an opinion on how this would play out. While there's just so many moving parts that even now, almost a week removed and 2 weeks removed from the initial Brett McMurphy reports, it's hard to sort of grasp what exactly the culpability here is, should be, what, who knows what, when. There's a lot to really, I think, digest. And so, yeah, you're right. Like I took some time really to sort of sit down and make sure I understood the timeline of things, where we stand right now. And of course, where we do stand right now is Urban Meyer's on an administrative leave and his job is in jeopardy and hanging in the balance. And I think the more recent reports indicate that perhaps even Gene Smith's job could be hanging in the balance, the athletic director at Ohio State. So I think, like, I guess maybe where I'd start on this is, do you think Urban Meyer will survive this? Like, and we could get into what you, whether you think he should, or, but I've gone back and forth on this even.
Right.
To where I thought he would survive it initially. I thought as the week, last week progressed, I thought he would not. And now I'm back to feeling like I feel like I have growing confidence that Urban Meyer will remain the head coach at Ohio State.
Wow. I am not ready to go that far, because the door that I've seen, that I was willing to, this was a door that I was willing to leave open, even at my most, even when I was at the highest amount of confidence that Urban Meyer had likely coached his last game for Ohio State, which was prior to his statement on Friday. I think that the investigation will not create results that will make anybody happy. I think they will be ambiguous, and I think that they will leave a lot of flexibility with Urban Meyer and Ohio State in terms of, really, everybody's going to say, well, we didn't, you know, we made a few mistakes here and there, but we didn't make any big enough mistakes. And that's where I could see an Urban Meyer, you know, if Urban Meyer's given an option where he resigns, but he does not receive any blame, official blame, in writing for anything regarding the handling of allegations against Zach Smith, and as long as he is not singled out to be the bad guy who didn't pick up the phone when he should have picked up the phone, which is, like, really, that's kind of what I sum this down to, is, like, do you believe that Urban Meyer messed up by not reporting what he knew about Zach Smith and domestic violence allegations? If that's what it comes down to, and then is it a school violation? You know, is it an ethical violation? Is it a moral violation? Like, I think that if Urban Meyer is given an option where he is not cited for a Title IX violation at the school level, where he is not cited for any major errors within this investigation, but instead it's just left to the jury of public opinion on a moral ethical issue, if he can get out of this without receiving any official blame, then I think that that's a path that could be likely. And that might mean having to resign from Ohio State, but it might be a situation that allows him at the age of 54 to continue his college football coaching career. Because you can argue that even if the investigation finds no wrongdoing and he returns to the sideline and he's there in week one, the nature of these allegations are going to have every single investigative journalist doing everything they can to pull on every string to see what might else be going on within the Ohio State football program. And I think that for that reason, you could argue that whether or not there is culpability, Urban Meyer, his presence with the Ohio State football program creates an issue that includes distraction that makes him not able to lead the football program to the best of his abilities.
Right. But here's, I think, two important points. One, I don't think Urban Meyer is going to go down without a fight. Like, Urban Meyer is not going to say, you know what? You're right. I could have handled this a little better. Thanks for everything, Ohio State. I'll walk away. Like, that, I don't see that happening. Because I think Urban Meyer is more stubborn than that, more prideful than that, more, I mean, he's been a very holier than thou persona throughout his career in a lot of ways. I don't see that being the way this plays out. So then you get to, all right, will Ohio State have the ability to fire him with cause? And I think the fact that Gene Smith, the athletic director, knew about the 2015 incident, which, according to Zach Smith in an interview, he did, because Gene Smith was the one that called Zach Smith, brought him in from the road to discuss allegations. Now, those Gene Smith found out about those allegations from the police, not Urban Meyer, so that doesn't necessarily get Urban Meyer off the hook, but I don't think Urban Meyer knew about those either at that time. So if Urban Meyer is gone, if Urban Meyer gets fired, then what does that mean for Gene Smith? Like, if does that mean Gene Smith is also on the hook? Now, I think where it gets tricky then is, all right, what's the timeline of all those texts that were coming into Shelly Meyer about the, you know, the hell that Courtney Smith was in? Can Urban Meyer prove that he didn't know about those text messages? And does that create a new sort of burden of on Urban Meyer that he should have acted following that 2015 incident? So where I'm at is, based on what we actually know, and, you know, this investigation, which is going to be, what, 14 days, basically?
Yeah, by the end of the month. We should know by the end of the month.
You know, we'll see what that uncovers. But based on what is available to us, it appears to me that Urban Meyer has cover in this, in terms of – now, like, that doesn't mean that – he's going to get out of this scot-free and that there won't be sort of this moral condemnation on him. But in terms of what Ohio State can do without losing a ton of money, I'm not sure that what we are privy to can allow that move to be made by Ohio State. And I think the other side of this too is, and I've said this before, this isn't a situation where Ohio State is as sort of sick of Urban Meyer's crap, and they're looking for a reason to get rid of him. Urban Meyer is, you know, remember when Gene Smith, when Jim Tressel was the head coach, and Jim Tressel got in a little trouble, and initially Gene Smith said, or no, it wasn't even Gene Smith, it was Gordon Gee.
Yeah, it was the president.
He said, "I'll be lucky if Jim Tressel doesn't fire me." It's like, that is what And I think Urban Meyer is probably even a step up from Jim Tressel in terms of what he sort of brings to the program, the career arc he's on, the trajectory of the program, and what he's done in a really constructive way in terms of player development, off-field, you know, hadn't been a lot of off-field issues, life after football, real-life Wednesday stuff that they're instituting within that program. So Ohio State would love for this to come for them to be able to clear his name and be able to continue operating with Urban Meyer as the head coach. So they're not looking for a Jim McElwain excuse to fire the guy. They're looking for an excuse to keep him.
Yeah.
And I think that they will conceivably find that excuse to keep him. Now, I also think the flip side of this is, look, I think Urban Meyer's legacy is forever scarred. Now, whether that scar will kind of fade away if he gets back into the – if he becomes a head coach again and wins a bunch of games and people just sort of forget about it, I don't know. But I think this will forever be a footnote on his resume, because here's the reality, is he did know that something happened in 2015, or at least there was an allegation of something happening in 2015, and he probably knew that there was other – troubling things going on within the relationship after that, given what we've seen Shelly Meyer receiving in text messages. And it's pretty clear, in fact, it's very clear, that Zach Smith is a turd. And he had this guy on his coaching staff for 6 years, and he had three off seasons after that 2015 allegation. And remember, this is in addition to 2009 allegation, but after that 2015 allegation, he had three off seasons to unload him. And look, he's just – I don't think you can argue that Zach Smith isn't a POS.
And that's been one of the most fascinating things to come out of this, has been reporters from around Columbus who have said as much regarding Zach Smith. And, you know, they're just the idea that this guy was protected because he was the grandson of a former Ohio State coach, particularly a former Ohio State coach who gave Urban Meyer his first job as a grad assistant.
Yep.
You know, that as we've seen in companies, in schools, in football programs, and organizations, that there was a little bit of, well, this guy's got the royal bloodline, so he is afforded extra chances and he is treated differently than everybody else. And I love the way you said it. It's the footnote. And a footnote of Urban Meyer's legacy will forever be that he overextended his loyalty to somebody who did not repay him in any way. And you mentioned this, I think, in Fort Lauderdale, but, or maybe it was on the podcast right after the news broke. Like, show me the on-field product that suggests that Ohio State has gotten elite coaching at the wide receiver level.
Right.
Like, yeah. Like, this was a coach who brought off-field, like 9 different visits from local police to the house on a domestic call, allegations multiple times across a span of 9 years, and you're going to continue to stand by this guy even when there have been plenty of reasons to criticize the job he is doing, like whether it's on field or off field. There seem to be 0 high marks, but because of an issue of loyalty, Urban Meyer was standing by this guy, and that's going to be the thing that, if it doesn't do him in, will always be a part of his legacy.
I mean, he was the lowest paid coach on Ohio State staff. They've never had consistent development at the wide receiver position, and it's very obvious that, like, whether you believe that, because look, he hasn't been convicted or even charged with domestic violence. But whether you believe that domestic violence took place or not, and there's plenty of text messages that make it hard to believe it didn't, in addition to the pictures. But again, you know that the guy is a turd just based on, look, he was cheating on his wife. He had drinking issues. He's clearly been a source of drama within the programs that he's been around, and Urban Meyer made active decisions to keep him. And again, made active decisions to keep him with 3 off seasons to unload him. You know, that's not even counting prior to 2012 when he hired him initially. Like, he had, I guess technically he had 6 off seasons to unload him, but 3 off seasons since 2015 to get rid of him, and he didn't. And so I just think that decision to, like, have loyalty to a mentor in Earl Bruce and his grandson is going to bite him. And ultimately, like, that was a tough decision that Urban Meyer wasn't able to make. Was, look, Coach Bruce, your grandson's not cutting it. Like, we need him to be this isn't going to work. And he wasn't willing to have that conversation. It appears like this is all, I mean, it's hard to cast these judgments on people from the outside looking in, but, like, to me, that seems like a very cut and dry. Like, it's hard to find anyone that says Zach Smith is an upstanding guy and that he's a great coach, and yet he's been a mainstay on Ohio State staff when there's been turnover in other places.
All right. I'm glad you mentioned Jim Tressel, because I want to bring this up. Dan Wetzel did a good job of actually returning, because a throwaway line I've heard in a lot of analysis has been, you know, Ohio State got rid of Jim Tressel, so they're not going to be afraid to get rid of Urban Meyer. And that is where you need to go back to the way that the end of Jim Tressel's career went, which included the fact that the first NCAA violations were found, like, Jim Tressel was found to be in violation of NCAA bylaws. His first punishment was a 2-game suspension. Jim Tressel then asked to have a 5-game suspension so that it would match his players. Like, that was going to be the honorable thing for Jim Tressel to do, to get a 5-game suspension. It wasn't until more reporting was done on the Ohio State program under Jim Tressel's watch that led to his resignation over Memorial Day weekend, some, I guess, 4 or 5 months after the suspension. So I ask you, do you think, like, as you're playing this out in your head, do you come to an Urban Meyer just total on the field week one, or do you come to, because it sounds like you are of the belief, as you're continuing to simulate it in your mind, that Urban Meyer's not going to be gone from Ohio State. So do you think that he starts week one, or do you think that this ends with some kind of middle ground where he receives punishment for from, you know, not saying the right thing at media days? Like, he'll admit to lying to the media, but he won't admit to allegations that he didn't do enough.
Like, that's why I think so. That's why it's important. And I'm not a contract lawyer. I'm not a labor lawyer. Like, I haven't read Urban Meyer's contract, but as I understand it, if Ohio State were to fire Meyer without cause, it owes him something like $38 million.
Correct.
So that's why I come back to, like, if Urban Meyer is not willing to negotiate a settlement and resign, and if they can't fire him with cause, then the reason Ohio State fired Jim Tressel wasn't because he lied to the NCAA. It was because they continued to find more information that made Ohio State vulnerable to bigger NCAA issues that would have – like, Ohio State was looking out for the best interests of Ohio State. It wasn't that it didn't have loyalty to Jim Tressel, and it was willing to stand behind Jim Tressel until they realized, like, we're going down a path that we're not going to be able to recover from. So Ohio State, if they're looking out for the best interest of Ohio State and they can't find cause for a firing, then I'm not sure Ohio State's just going to pony up $38 million to go hire another coach.
Correct. I agree with that.
So, like, that's why I think, I don't know, maybe you can, like, and then, but then part of me says, like, all right, but if you are going to suspend him, then you're admitting that there was mishandling of a domestic abuse situation. And it's almost like you have to say, we take that this was mishandled and therefore he is gone, or this was handled correctly, he is back in good standing as the head coach. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know how I don't know how you can straddle that and play both sides of the fence.
I think it's him lying to the media. I think okay. you say he handled
that's
it.
That's the excuse. Yeah.
He handled it right. He should not have said what he said at Big Ten Media Days. That was not correct. I mean, we have seen politicians. Oh, yeah, I said that. Yeah, that was wrong. I misspoke. My bad. And then you just keep it moving.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, Urban Meyer, I mean, it seems it's not easy. But it seems obvious, like, the way to handle a situation like Urban Meyer have faced with Big Ten Media Days is to just, hey, we're sorting through this, guys. I'm learning about all this as you are. I'll comment on that as I get more information down the road. Whatever. Like,
yeah, but then he can't help it. He can't help himself being like, and I don't know why anyone would write a report like that.
That's all you got to do is just don't say something ridiculous like that. Yeah. And then, like, that's going to be forever like a soundbite associated with Urban Meyer is, like, who makes up something like that on an incident that Urban Meyer, in retrospect, knew about extensively. So, media day performance was not his best effort.
Yeah, I think that is – like, that's the place where I land, especially when you go back to my ultimate prediction that no one's going to be happy. Like, I think you land at Urban Meyer admits that he lied or he even softens it up with, like, misspoke or I was wrong to do that. And he takes some sort of minor punishment. And you're right. Maybe Gene Smith, with this meeting with Zach Smith, you know, finds himself in as the one who has to fall on the sword here. And Gene Smith has not been without some criticism for his own job performance and where he stands with, you know, the university and his bosses. I do not know. I do not know the ins and outs of that relationship, but it's not going to be good for him. But as how about this? It seems that you and I both believe that Urban Meyer, when this investigation is concluded, this investigation will not result in Urban Meyer being dismissed or fired as the Ohio State coach, correct?
So that's where I'm leaning now, but is that what you believe as well?
If we're placing prop bets, my bet is on suspension. Four games, something like that. Where's the Penn State game? It'll be one game short of that.
Right. All right, so here's the next question, because hey, we may find out by tomorrow that Urban Meyer is back as the head coach, and this question, you know, falls into falls into eternity.
But our takes are timeless, Barton. Our takes are gold and timeless. All right, give it to me.
But so given that, let's say he's let go or he resigns. What do you think that means for the future of the 2018 Ohio State Buckeyes? A team that has a national title, college football playoff aspirations. Do you think that they are – do you think – like, does your opinion on what they will accomplish change? Would you alter your Big Ten projections or your college football playoff projections based on – and I don't even know if you have them in the playoffs or if you have them win the Big Ten, but how does that impact this team in your opinion?
3 points per game. I'm going to go with the – and I've got – that's Westgate Superbook – odds makers take on that. Urban Meyer
that's what they're saying.
I'm agreeing. That is what they're saying, and okay. I'm using that to start because I agree. I think Urban Meyer's worth 3 points per game to the 2018 Ohio State Buckeyes, and I think that the way that I played out the Buckeyes season, there are only one or two games that would be decided by 3 points per game or less. And I already had them losing one, so not much. I think the Ohio State Buckeyes, led by Ryan Day, if Ryan Day is the interim coach for the entire 2018 season, I think Ohio State can still win the Big Ten. Now, does that mean that I'm not maybe, you know, when it comes time for those games, that I'm not starting to feel a lot better about Michigan's chance to finally, end the losing streak? No, I think Michigan probably has a much better chance. You know, Penn State, I lean a lot harder Penn State, and I had Penn State winning that game already.
Did you have Ohio State win in the East?
Yeah, I had them win in the East at 11-1.
Okay, all right, great. So you have them winning the East at 11-1. Does that mean you still have them winning the East at 11-1?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it's the Michigan game I think I would flip, and then I think Big Ten championship game. I think if Ohio State goes up against Wisconsin again and Urban Meyer's not on the sideline, that might be enough for me to take Wisconsin. You know, I really think that if I agree with the assessment that Urban Meyer is worth 3 points a game to the 2018 Ohio State Buckeyes, so then as I go back and I start circling the games that I think 3 points could end up being the difference between winner and loser, there's just not many of them. Maybe they're 10-2, but I still think the team is good enough. And I mean, this is a good opportunity for Ryan Day, right? If he were to actually take the field this season. A young coach who's sort of been passed along and moved his way up the ladder. Like this, I don't think that this plays out the same way as it did for Luke Fickell.
Yeah. So, all right. First of all right. You look at their schedule. Like Urban Meyer being gone has no impact on Oregon State, Rutgers, Tulane, Indiana, Minnesota, Purdue, probably Nebraska, Maryland, any of those games, right? And so basically what we're saying is if Urban Meyer is gone, then how does that impact Michigan, at Michigan State, at Penn State, and TCU, right?
Right.
So it's like four games.
Right.
So I think if you like Ohio – what I said, and I said this on the radio recently, like if you have the over – and that line moves down. If it's, what is it now? I think it's 10.5. Is that right?
Yeah, at least that's what it was prior to Thursday.
Yeah, right. So let's say the line moves down to 10. I think you sprinkle a little more on that over, right? Like, just if you already like the over and you're going to get more value to it, you know, add another little chunk to it. Because to me, like you said, I mean, yeah, okay, I don't think they're going to go from an 11-win team to a 9-win team. And in fact, I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference, because I try to think back of where a similar situation has occurred. And I don't know if you can think of others, but all right. So Arkansas, when Bobby Petrino was fired in like April because of the motorcycle incident, Arkansas hired John L. Smith as like a holdover coach. And that team went from 11-2 the year before to 4-8.
Yeah.
Under John L. Smith. After Browse's situation, remember they hired Jim Grobe as sort of this outside grounding coach to just sort of keep the train on the tracks. They went from 7-6 the year before to 10-3 the year before to 7-6 after. Though, I actually think the only comparison that actually makes sense, even though it was a less volatile situation, is when Bob Stoops left and Lincoln Riley was promoted. Because Bob Stoops left in like June, Lincoln Riley's promoted to head coach, same staff,
right?
Which was a staff that had already accomplished a lot. And Ryan Day is also the offensive coordinator. He's also an incredibly highly respected coach all over college football and in the NFL. He turned down an NFL offensive coordinator job to stay at Ohio State. They were 11-2 last year before Bob Stoops left, and then this past year they went to 12-2 with Lincoln Riley. So I think, given that Kevin Wilson's on the staff, Greg Schiano's on the staff, and Larry Johnson's still the defensive line coach, and Alex Grinch is coming in as the co-defensive coordinator, like, I don't – there's distractions there. But in terms of, like, what is going to happen in the meeting rooms from week to week, in terms of what the practices are going to look like and the intensity level and the preparation of everybody, I mean, Mickey Mariotti's still there, the strength coach. Like, I don't think – this would have a major impact on the season. Now, that's not to say this won't have a major impact on the program, because I think recruiting, there's few coaches in college football that have a bigger impact on their own recruiting classes than Urban Meyer does. But in terms of what happens on the field, like, I don't know how you sort of predict some bottom dropping out for this Ohio State team.
No, this and now, as I've said it out loud, wouldn't it be the ultimate asterisk? Not an asterisk, but like, what if Jim Harbaugh finally does get that Ohio State win, but Urban's not on the sideline?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because then Michigan finally gets to cheer, like, getting to beat the Buckeyes, but Ohio State fans are like, yeah, but Urban wasn't there.
Well, how about the other side of it? I mean, what if Jim doesn't win? What if Michigan doesn't beat Ohio State? Now it's like, all right, you lost four straight, and hey, it's okay. All right, it's not as okay, but hey, if you lose three straight and they're close games, or two of the three are close games to one of the greatest coaches, college football coaches of all time, all right, Jim, like, keep on scrapping, man. Like, we'll get there. But if you lose number four, and this one is to Ryan Day,
like,
all right, now this is heating up.
Yeah. Man, I'm all right. So we're on the same page with this. Like, Ohio State as a team in 2018 should still be able to accomplish all of its goals, regardless of what is done at the head coach position.
Yeah, the team that won a national championship with their third string quarterback, I think they've got the talent and coaching staff in place to do this. There's not a coaching staff in all of college football better equipped for this situation than Ohio State's. Right? Like, is there one?
No.
This is not only is this an elite coaching staff with a bunch of former head coaches, with a bunch of guys who could be defensive coordinators or whatever anywhere else. A lot of them have been there for several years. Like, it's not like, you know, Alabama staff that just turned over half the group. Like, this is a staff that's like, even the new receivers coach is Brian Hartline, who's like been a fixture of that program for several years now as an analyst or whatever his role has been. So yes, like this is, if anybody can absorb this, even though he's one of the greatest coaches of all time, it would be Ohio State.
Mm. All right. As we pivot from Ohio State to we got to keep it balanced. We're going to go from a blue blood to a real up and coming program, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Right. So Jalen Hurts. Let's start with the quote. Jalen Hurts told ESPN's Alex Scarborough that he was shocked when Saban told reporters at SEC Media Days that he had, quote, no idea whether Hurts would be on the roster opening day. Of course, he's talking about Jalen Hurts' potential transfer rumors. I mean, this is a situation that is uncontrollable, Hurts said. Coaches can't control this situation. They dictate who plays, but as far as the other variations to it, they don't control it, honestly. Like I said, this whole spring, ever since the game, they kind of wanted to let it play out, and I guess didn't think it was a thing to let it die down there like it wasn't something there. But that's always been the elephant in the room. For me, no one came up to me the whole spring, coaches included. No one asked me how I felt. No one asked me what was on my mind. No one asked me how I felt about the things that were going on. Nobody asked me what my future held. That's that. So now it's like when we try to handle the situation now, for me, it's kind of late. It's too late. The narrative has already been created. Do you know what this sounds like to me, Barton? This sounds like an NFL training camp, like a disgruntled quarterback in an NFL training camp.
Yeah. Well, I've my view on this has shifted somewhat so first of all, this is awesome from a media side of things to hear Jalen Hurts have a very honest and thoughtful response to questions.
Yeah.
Like, we always ask for that, and I always will applaud it when it happens. So on that end, I am appreciative of this, because here we are, and then we're going to talk about it now. And I'll also say this. In just that quote that you just read, because I saw that clip initially, just that quote, and as a media guy, I love it, but as a former player, I'm sort of would be like, man, that's how you feel? All right, we'll talk to coach about it. You know, like, don't, like, now, okay, like, this is going to be a thing now that we all got to deal with. And like, oh, really, man? Like, are you, like, you're mad no one talked to you this offseason? Like, that's, you're going to tell all the media guys about it? Like, congratulations. You know, this is, now we got that much more of a spotlight on us. The magnifying glass is that much more on you and Tua. Now the team's that much more divided, whatever. And so I would have been probably frustrated. But then I sort of looked at the entire, like, as is typically the case. Like, if you look at the entire interview, and this was an interview with a bunch of reporters at Media Day with recorders in his face. And when you read just that portion of, like, you know, no one asked me what my future held, so that's it. Now it's kind of late. It's too late. Well, the way I initially perceived that is, all right, he's saying it's too late now. You know, you can't, don't come up and ask me how I feel now. This is, you know, this is the bed. Now we got to all sleep in it. What all he's talking about is, like, over the course of that entire interview, he's basically talking about how he has never been asked until now about things. Alabama has asked him to be quiet. He's not been out in the media talking about things. And so what he's talking about is the narrative that he might leave this fall.
Right.
And what he's actually saying is, what this quote is supposed to say is that I never was going to leave. I got 15 credits till graduation. I'm going to be here. Like, right. I'm going to be here for spring ball. I'm going to be here for fall. I'm going to be here this season, and then we'll see what happens after that. But I'm not going anywhere. Forget about what my dad said. Forget about what the media said. Forget about what Coach Saban said at SEC Media Days. I'm here, and I'm ready to compete. And so I think it's going to be – that's a vague enough comment to where people are going to take it as, like, this kid is suddenly creating drama about the quarterback position – when what he's really trying to say is, look, there's all these stories out there. There's this narrative out there that I'm not trying to be here for my teammates, that I'm just here, you know, that my time at Alabama is dependent on whether or not I win this job. This is a battle. I'm ready for it, but I'm not going anywhere. So I think if you really take the comment within the context of everything else he was saying, it makes a ton of sense, and it continues to make me really like Jalen Hurts as a kid, and I think he's a really mature kid. And yet, here we go. You know, this is ding, ding, ding. Like the Alabama quarterback battle weekly updates. Shoot, forget that. Daily, hourly updates.
Let's go. Well, this is why I said disgruntled player at an NFL training camp, because sometimes in the NFL training camps and within the NFL, we get the players and coaches sending messages through the media to each other.
Right.
And that's kind of where I was seeing it, where I was asked on a radio interview, was like, so does this mean he's gone? I said, no, he's definitely not leaving, at least not before he finishes his undergraduate degree. Like this is him probably, you know, whether he's meaning to or not, you know, this is him sharing his side of it, which is like, guys, like, you know, whether it is a message to Saban specifically or the media in general, it's just him saying like, you guys are the ones that are creating all this talk. I hope that through what I have done here, like he talked about his brand, and he hopes that he's a star. And what has he done? He's 26-2 as a starter. He had 17 touchdowns, one interception last year. He was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year as a freshman. He has created a brand for himself, and he has established himself to the point within, and like insert all of the Alabama as an NFL team jokes that you want, both like illicit or whatever, but like he has established himself as a pro in a locker room of future pros. And so it just wasn't surprising that, you know, he is not going to be backed into the corner of, he's not going to be backed in the corner of yes or no, sir, being subservient to the brand when he understands the leverage that he has in this situation.
You're absolutely right. I think he's an adult at this point. Like,
he's an adult.
He came to Alabama as an adult. Like he was one of the, when I was getting all the interviews about what do you think of Jalen Hurts or can Jalen Hurts, you know, what I always said was, look, man, this kid, when they're at the Elite 11 and as a rising senior, like this kid was all business. Like he was mature. Because of that, I think he's got the mental, emotional foundation to be really successful as a starting quarterback at a really young age. And now here he is, and this is 2 years later, and he's even more mature. And I think that is a great comparison. Like, he sounds like an NFL quarterback talking about, look, man, you guys are going to put the mics in my face. Okay, here's what I'm thinking. I don't know why there's been this narrative created when I'm right here, and I'm not going anywhere, and I'm not said a thing. Like, so... And to clarify too, just so that everyone's aware, because this is not as heavily publicized, I'm not seeing this other places when you're seeing these pull out quotes from his interview. But he says, like, I'll read this quote. He says, let's see, what did he say? Now I lost my spot here. He said, I was kind of shocked that he said that, talking about Saban, talking about he doesn't know if he'll be here come first game of the season. But me coming at him and trying to see what was going on and all that, then I told him that I'd be here. It was never a decision that needed to be made in regards to me leaving. That was something that the kind of general media placed on me, something I never said. So with that, I told him, I said, I told you already I'd be here. I'm about to graduate in January, so why leave? Even when I'm not in the situation where I think I should be, I'm here. Why do that when you're 15 credits, 15 hours away from graduating? So he said, that's the headline. Jalen Hurts is here. All right, we could stop that conversation now. Like, Jalen Hurts is going to be on this team this fall. He said it. So next time someone asks me that question, I can just be like, well, like, it's not my opinion. Like, the kid has said it. He is going to be on this team in the fall. And what happens after that? Like, I can make predictions on that. I still think Tua will be the starter, and I think Jalen will be on in January. But he'll be gone after having a successful season playing whatever role Nick Saban has for him, if that's the starter or if that's the backup. Like, I have confidence that Jalen Hurts is going to be a good soldier regardless of what that role is. And then where he goes from there will be what's best for him.
Come on, Nick. Hey, come on, coach. You know if I leave, how bad things are going to get. One to a twisted ankle, and you're done. Like, think about the leverage in that situation.
Yeah. Now, Mac Jones sort of outplayed him in the spring game, but the
reality is... You standing with Mac Jones?
No, I'm not. I want Jalen Hurts in there.
Yeah, absolutely would want Jalen Hurts in there. That's... Yeah. I was glad to hear that you've landed on that too, but man, the I came away from this just like, yeah. I mean, you said it right. Jalen's an adult. He's not afraid to speak his mind on this. And yeah. if you thought that you were gonna get this is like part of a new, and I'm sure it's gonna creep up in our podcast all the time. I am a little bit interested with how players are going to continue to recognize their ability to vocalize themselves and their opinions and take more of a stand than what I guess the traditionalist might want from a college football player.
Right, but not everyone has the leverage to do this.
Right.
Like, you're right. I mean, Jalen Hurts is in a unique situation where...
Baker Mayfield was in a unique situation. Like, there are very few, you're right, it's very afforded to very few players.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, in the NFL, you've got, you know, those guys are getting paid more than the coaches are. So they've, you know, the team is very invested in those guys, and they can be adults, and they can say what they want to say, and they can, you know, the team, you know, if they're getting their money, and whereas in college, look, man, you're still just a kid banking on a scholarship. But this is a unique situation where Jalen Hurts is sort of has the flexibility and the leverage to. And I don't think anything he said is out of line. I don't think anything he said, when you take it in context, hurts the team or anything like that. But he can say what he thinks at this point because, man, he's earned it. He's been a good Warrior for 2 years, 26-2. And B, they freaking need him.
Yeah.
And whether he's starting or not, they need him.
Alabama, poll talk. Gotta love a coach's poll. Alabama,
our first poll talk, of the poll season, talk, right? Poll talk.
Yes.
Exciting.
So exciting. Alabama, number one. No big surprise there. Clemson, 2. Ohio State, 3. Georgia, 4. Oklahoma, number 5. As we looked at the coach's poll as a whole, you know, we have filled out our own ballots for the CBS Sports 130. That will be coming out later this week. We have spent most of the last month discussing our over-unders and how these teams stack up against each other. As we looked at the coaches poll, where were some of the places where you looked at a team and you're like, huh, so the coaches think they're there, huh?
Well, I think maybe my biggest takeaway was what Alabama got, like, I think 61 first place votes, and Clemson got what, like 4 or something like that.
Like, you see, I've got Clemson as my number one.
Right. Is there that much of a discrepancy in among? I guess this ultimately is, you know, SIDs more so than coaches probably, but.
Hey, 92% of our candid coaches surveyed did name Alabama as the best team for 2018.
Yeah, that surprised me. I don't know if that's lazy or if we're wrong, but to me, I would have Clemson first. I mean, they were first in my CBS poll that we get, you know.
Oh, really?
Handed in.
Oh man, yeah. I hope that Clemson ends up being number one. Do you know what a difference is in traffic if we're going against the grain here?
Did you have them number one?
I had them number one.
Yeah, I mean.
So that's 2 of the like 12 votes right there. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I mean, and at the very least, like, I mean, I think it's very defensible to have Alabama number one. I won't argue with anyone that does, but I'm just surprised that it's that much of a, you know, difference. I mean, that's a big difference.
I start this to say I understand, like, one of the, you know, theories that I often preach is that in my book, the difference between like 15, 16, and 17, and even the number 30 to 35 team in the country might not be that much. And especially with zero on the field data to be able to take from this, it gets very difficult. But that was where I found some things that had me wrinkle my brow a little bit. Number one, there is like TCU being 16, and I know you're big on TCU, but this is a TCU team that Vegas has set the over-under at 7.5. Coaches obviously higher on Gary Patterson, more in line with Barton's thinking, but we got TCU at 16, West Virginia at 20, Texas at 21, Oklahoma State just inside the rankings at 25. That is a lot of respect for the Big 12 from the rest of the coaching community. And that was, you know, I don't think in my top 25 I have West Virginia, Texas, or Oklahoma State in my top 25.
I don't think I do either. I mean, you're right. TCU, it doesn't surprise me, but maybe that's just because I'm overly high on them. But
7-5 teams, yeah, or 8-4 teams don't finish number 16 in the country.
Right. But what was West Virginia last year? I mean, to that point, too. Like, that's – they were, what, 7-5, too, or something like that? I mean, to have West Virginia there 20th, Oklahoma State at 25th, Texas at 21st, like, those are three teams that could easily be outside the top 25, you know, 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, real quick.
Yeah, so that was – yeah, I agree. And at the same time, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that's wrong, because I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. Like, that's not a conference I'm going to predict. I don't know what's going to happen in the Big 12. That is mayhem in the Big 12. Like, I don't want to touch that. So I'm not going to say it's wrong. It's just a little surprising. I'll say this too. Like, one of our biggest, when we were down in Fort Lauderdale and all the CBSSports.com team was down there, one of probably the most often discussed teams was Michigan. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
So Michigan at 14th is pretty low to me. Now, there's people in our group, cough, cough, Barrett Salee, who thinks that's probably maybe even high. But I think Michigan's fascinating. Like, this is a fascinating team. That's why Michigan Notre Dame is the game I'm most interested in week one, even beyond Auburn Washington, because, like, I think we're going to learn a lot about what those two teams are. But Michigan, I think you could make a case, and there's going to be some, like, Ohio State and Big Ten fans that will kill me for saying this, but I think you can make a case that Michigan could be as high as, like, fourth.
Right. Well, how about this? In the national championship odds, Michigan's like the fifth or sixth name on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I want to be clear too, like, this is not some pushing all my chips forward on Shea Patterson, because I think I'd be saying this if Shea Patterson never transferred to Michigan, because I've always felt
that Brandon Peters is the one.
Yeah, look, Brandon Peters can play.
Yes.
And this was the year Michigan was supposed to be good, and now the year has come, and Michigan, why can't Michigan be good? Like, that's my argument. Defense is great. Offensive line, maybe we can get an O-line expert to come in and give us their thoughts on how good this offensive line can be, but the run game should be okay. And if a quarterback is improved, which Brandon Peters would be, and you expect Shea Patterson to be, and you got Tariq Black on the outside, and Donovan Peoples-Jones on the outside, and they had a loaded wide receiving core in 2017's recruiting class that is now ready to step into some bigger roles. I just think they've recruited well enough to where this year could be a breakthrough year. And so, and I'm not saying I expected them to be up there at fifth, but 14th is a lot. Like, I would think,
14 was behind Michigan State.
Right. They're, you know, and that's the other thing. They're fourth in the Big Ten East at 14th.
Fifth in the Big Ten as a total. Yeah, so Ohio State's at 3, Wisconsin's at 7, Penn State at 9, Michigan State at 12, Michigan at 14.
So there, I mean, that's, man, that to me, and that's also, it's a lot of coaches or a lot of voters having a lot of confidence in Trace McSorley to, you know, to mask all those losses that Penn State felt this year. So it's interesting, man. Like it's at the very least, it's interesting to know where our opinions are sort of contradictory to, you know, the national consensus.
Do you know what I'm not willing to rule out?
What?
First of all, I have heard that coaches, while the SID joke is 100% on the money, especially like weeks 2 or even week 1 through 14, I have heard that coaches will participate more on a higher percentage with the first and the last. I think those get published too. So yep. they really are putting their name by it. And I am not willing to rule out that some coaches just don't like Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I could probably believe that.
I am not willing to rule out the idea that when it came time for splitting hairs between, like, you know, a Mark D'Antonio, a David Shaw, and a Mark Richt, that Jim Harbaugh ended up losing that in a lot of coaches' ballots.
Yeah, I could believe that. But and there's also just the argument that, look, man, that's a representation of that Big Ten East. Like, that is truly a conference where you kind of are splitting hairs. There's going to be, between those four teams, the Big Ten East, there's going to be, I don't know how the math comes out on how many games four teams play against each other. But those are all going to be really close games where a first down marker here or a, you know, a drop pass there. I mean, they're going to be inches that separate those wins. So it's like, all right, man, I mean, yeah, I guess if Michigan comes out fourth in that, like, that's believable.
Right.
But it's also believable that they would win that division too.
Isn't it 9? Is it 9 games?
Is that it?
14.
Times 3 times 2 times 1. Is that how you do that?
I was just going to say. No. I was saying,
no, that's not how you do it.
oh, no, it's not 9. It doesn't come out to be 9. It's got to be an even number. Oh, man.
I have no idea, man. You got us into this rabbit hole. I was just going to let it go, and now you're going to expose my horrible math skills.
I thought that, speaking of funny math, I thought Virginia Tech at 17 and Florida State at 19 were both a little bit of just sort of riding the coattails of, you know, great program, high expectations. I think that arguing for either as a top 20 program, it's a little bit early to do that. But you know what that does do is, boy, that's good to have two nationally ranked teams for that Monday night game.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, but I don't think either one of those are top 20 teams yet. Not willing to say that.
So one team that wasn't in the top 25, North Carolina. Have you seen the news that's broken as we've been on this podcast recording on, what is today, Monday, August 6th?
Yes.
You have seen it?
Yes.
13 players will be suspended for the opener, including starting quarterback Chaz Surratt.
Yes.
They'll be suspended for 4 games. I mean, that's a brutal first 4 game stretch too. They got to win some of those.
Did you see that they have to stagger the suspensions because so many of the players are at the same position?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, if they did it the way, you know, typically when you have these, you know, incidents of violation that could impact your eligibility, it is, you know, everyone's going to miss the first 2 games. And you and I were talking about, it's like, oh, man, and, you know, those are some of the most important games of the season. Well, they have so many players that are catching suspensions that some players are going to suit up week 1 and then be suspended games 2, 3, and 4.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
this was quite the widespread gear pedaling operation they had going on.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 players will sit out 4 games. 2 more players will sit out 2 games, and 2 more players will sit out 1. So it's 13 players, and the depth is particularly impacted in the defensive backfield, linebackers, and offensive line.
Oh, man, that's not a great spot to be down, defensive line, offensive line. So I guess if you're just like throwing a workout shirt on eBay, you know, maybe you just get one game. But if you're out there, marketing the Jumpmans, the Jordans, the kicks, those will get you 4 games maybe. That's hey, I'm sure they got a good price point for a few of those.
Well, unfortunately, that good price point is what got them the 4 game suspension, because this comes down to dollar values.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, no, whoever just got the 1 game, so 1 game suspension was backup quarterback Jack Davidson and offensive lineman Jonah Melton. So I'm guessing they sold the sandals, right? Like they just got some sandals for $65 or something like that. No, I mean, defensive end Malik Kearney, that's one of the better defensive line players. I'd put him behind Jalen Dalton, but he's still important. Malik Robinson is a linebacker, and certainly Chaz Surratt, one of the expected starters. I mean, this is not good. No bueno.
This gonna be another ugly year for UNC. I wasn't super like optimistic about UNC to begin with. So I'm not letting this totally cloud my judgment, but this doesn't help a team that I didn't have a lot of faith in otherwise.
How about language in Larry Fedora's contract that adjusts his buyout based on whether or not an athletic football facility is built by either August or September 1st that has not been built yet?
Wow. So that means the buyout's bigger, huh?
It means it's easier for him to get out of his contract.
Easy for him to get out?
Yes.
Shoot, where's he gonna go?
I don't know, man. But could be one of those years where you just step out, you know?
Yeah. I'm not sure who's hiring Larry Fedora right now though. That's a lateral step or a step up.
Oh, I mean, but isn't it? I don't know. We don't need to get into the deep dive on that. But that's like the, you know, just getting out of town. Like, when was it? Was it Tommy Tuberville that left Texas Tech for Cincinnati?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it was like he wasn't necessarily going to get fired at Texas Tech, but the trajectory wasn't pointing in the right direction.
Right.
And he just made it.
Let's go jump on that East Carolina job down the road.
Dude, or just Tulane.
Yeah.
Like after Willie Fritz gets a new job and all of a sudden... you know, it always has been my dream to be in New Orleans. Get back to Texas. Let's see. Yeah, who knows? But yeah, you're right. 13 North Carolina football players being suspended for NCAA violations is not the way that you hit the over on 5 for your win total.
No. That's trouble.
I mean, Kearney will sit against ECU, UCF, Pittsburgh, and Virginia Tech, while Fox will sit against Miami, Syracuse, Virginia, and Georgia Tech. Like, this will be continuing to impact the team 6 weeks into the season.
Right. Yeah. So, like, those, not only are those first 4 games critical to this team's success, but, like, we're not even done after those 4 games. Like, we're still getting body blows at that point.
Mm. Good luck, Tar Heels. We'll see how this goes. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you're always subscribed to the podcast. That's going to be the way you're going to get them first. We've got the next month, man. We're excited about it. So make sure that you subscribe. We got some special shows with some unique focus so we can really dig into the sport in a way that nobody else in this space is. So you want to be on. You want to make sure that you don't miss it. All right, Barton. Thank you very much.
Yeah, man.